Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. What a year, what a year. So many stories in 2019. And tonight we're going to look at some of the top stories of the year. My guests are Misha Green, D.C. editor of the Afro-American newspaper, and Keith Alexander, reporter with the Washington Post. Lines are open if you have thoughts about the top stories of 2019. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Hey, everybody.
Hello. Hey, Happy New Year.
How are you?
That's right.
Happy
Kwanzaa. Yes. Right. That's right. Happy Kwanzaa, second day of Kwanzaa today. So many stories. And tonight we are going to look at number 10. We're going to work our way down. It's going to be like ESPN top 10 stories of the year. Let us start with number 10, the Popeyes chicken sandwich. This is not a tongue-in-cheek consideration at all. There was so much fanfare and so much attention paid to it. Have we ever seen anything so interesting that dominated a news cycle?
No. I mean, Popeyes won the internet and social media this year. Congratulations to Popeyes on that. No question. I mean, they saved so much money in marketing just from the simple fact that they were internet and social media sensations, which is like, doesn't everyone want to be that these days?
You know, I think the last time we saw a fast food restaurant that got that much publicity was probably Wendy's and the whole "Where's the Beef" campaign back in the day. But even with Wendy's, no one died or was killed as a result of a Wendy's single. Back in November 4th, a man was allegedly stabbed to death for cutting the line in a Popeyes restaurant out there in Oxon Hill.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, just last week he was actually indicted on murder charges. That took this fun, tongue-in-cheek story to a whole new level that we as a nation I don't think have ever seen before.
And I think, certainly there's no question about whether or not the guy was stabbed and whether or not he died. I mean, I think that the overarching issue was that the victim who butted in line, I think that was the thing that was so fascinating, almost to the point where this Popeye's chicken story was a backdrop to an issue about how civility impacts the community or how incivility can end up with somebody dead.
Well, it's interesting. You bring up the fact of the victim cutting line, and I'm more interested in the fact that someone would stab someone to death because somebody cut in front of him. The onus is really on that action more so than the cutting of the line. Now, according to the attorneys, if you talk to them, the attorney for the man who is charged, he said there was more to this story.
Yeah.
That there was a backstory between these two gentlemen that has yet to be made public.
Yeah, because initially there were reports that these two did not know each other.
Right? Right.
That was and to the point, there have been more than 30 reported incidents of violence related to this chicken sandwich across the country, where people were upset because the Popeyes restaurant that they went to ran out of chicken sandwiches, and it just really makes me question, is it that the chicken sandwich was so good, or is it that we just can't control ourselves when it comes to our frustrations?
Well, I mean, I think it's definitely the latter. I tried the chicken sandwich, and I'm not a food critic, so I'm not going to give any reviews today. But
did you like it?
Yeah, it wasn't amazing to me, to be quite honest.
I thought it was salty.
It's a chicken sandwich.
It was a chicken sandwich. It was what it was. I think, you know, kudos to those food critics that did come out and say, here are other great places, in particularly in the D.C. area, to get chicken sandwiches.
Like my house. I cook better than that. But anyway,
we'll totally go over there.
But it was also just it wasn't just African Americans. We saw social media videos of people of all races cutting up, fighting in drive-through windows, pulling employees through drive-through windows over the fact that they've waited for hours and hours and now they've got no chicken sandwich. I think it goes back to what you were saying. It really does say that people were so high strung in 2019. I really think that there's people who are so on edge that it's not taking much to set them over.
Well, it goes back to the call-out culture that we've developed, particularly in 2019. I mean, that's a big thing, even with the guy, Kevin Davis, who was killed at the Popeyes, right? The person who initially stabbed him, you know, first called him out. He didn't even cut in front of the guy who stabbed him, but it was another woman. And I think in a lot of these stories that we're seeing, the fights and the violence, it's somebody else thinking that they need to be the loud and bold Good Samaritan in that case. That just turns violent. I mean, people can't take critiques. And definitely in this case, we saw the incivility that we are facing here in the United States. But I mean, this call out culture is so incredibly popular, and we can do it on the internet. But look what happens when you do it in real life.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the top stories of 2019. We have quite a ways to go, but let me go to the phone lines. If you have a comment about some of the top stories of 2019, give us a call. Dr. Sharon calling from Silver Spring. Hey, Doc, what's going on?
Hi.
Hey, what's happening?
Hi, Harold. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Quickly, this is my most popular social media post of the year, and I got cussed out in every language known to man for talking about the nutritional value, horrible value. But one thing that was amazing, I'm serious, the B word, it was ridiculous. But doctors from around the country actually responded and said there was a spike in number of persons in urban areas coming into the ER with elevated blood pressures, out of control diabetes, and several strokes. The AMA, several medical organizations approached, and I certainly approached Popeyes over 100 times, to get the nutritional information, the accurate information, but national organizations, as of last month, still could not get it. So for us, from the medical standpoint, this was really a call out to the most vulnerable population that this was not healthy for us.
Yeah.
We saw direct stuff.
Yeah. Well, Sharon, thank you so much. And see that, and that's the thing. Like I said, the sandwich was salty.
Yeah.
And you got fried on top of bread on top of creamy. I mean, come on.
It's fast food.
Yeah.
It is. And Dr. Sharon, I actually know Dr. Sharon, and we're Facebook friends, and I sat back and I watched. She wasn't kidding. People were attacking her for criticizing and giving you educational value about the sandwich. And I was amazed how people were taking it personally when she was trying to educate people about the salt value and just how unhealthy these sandwiches are.
That's so unfortunate, especially because the violence has been such in the forefront, and how good it's been has been in the forefront. And so why can't we take those conversations to talk about the extreme, issues in the Black community when it comes to health and what we're putting in our bodies in general? I think the Popeye sandwich would have been a great way to highlight that.
Well, speaking of taking things personally, that race for the White House definitely got personal this year.
It was hurtful to hear you talk about the reputations of two United States senators who built their reputations and career on the segregation of race in this country.
Kamala Harris no longer in the race for the White House. That was during the first debate, I believe it was. First or second?
Ms. O'Benny.
Yeah, there you go.
It was summertime, though.
Yeah, that's right. And the comments are not easy. Let me tell you, Kamala Harris really pushing back against Vice President Joe Biden about his saying that he could work with segregationist senators when he, during the early days of his political career on the Hill. And that was just the beginning. We had some 20 or so Democratic candidates, and now we are below double digits.
Yeah.
But can any of these Democrats beat Donald Trump? We've got Buttigieg getting a boost from last week, and we've got, you know, Joe not making any gaffes last week. So what's happening here?
And now we're seeing Chang's numbers going up.
Exactly.
Which no one expected. When you talk to people are watching these debates closely. I think what we're hearing and what I'm seeing when I talk to people is that people are just like, can we just get to November? Can we just get to November?
Because is it possible?
I think what's going to come down to really is the vice president choice. Whoever picks the right person to run as a good vice president candidate. And you're hearing a lot of names being thrown around. Kamala Harris, of course. So we're going to see what happens. But I think people are just now at the point like, okay, we just get to November. And because this is, have we ever seen these many candidates in a presidential race ever before?
We haven't seen this since 2016.
Will, right.
When the Republicans had 17 candidates, including a Donald Trump, which nobody at that time thought that he would ever have a chance. And not only did he have a chance, he became president, but now there are a lot of people asking, even Democrats and Republicans, is it possible, even after being impeached, whether or not Donald Trump is truly beatable?
Yeah, I mean, I'm asking the same question. I'm talking to a lot of people who are wondering the same thing. I think part, and I'm really happy that you brought up, Harold, the fact that it reminds you so much of 2015 and 2016 when all of these people were in the race, is that then, you know, when there's such a crowded field, people get distracted. People don't know who to vote for. And so that race to November gets you people like Donald Trump as the front candidate. And so, you know, quite frankly, there are not candidates quite like Donald Trump on the Democratic side, but it really becomes a distraction to what are the real issues, who are people really going to vote for that can beat Donald Trump. And I'm not sure any of the candidates right now necessarily have enough strength without picking whoever their vice president
is. Right, I think we're seeing a lot of interest in, obviously, in Warren and obviously Biden. Those right now seem to be affirmative. But like you all both said, Trump was a nobody. He came up from behind. So it really is anyone's call.
Absolutely. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the top stories of 2019. If you have thoughts about the top stories of 2019, give us a call again at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Number 8. Let's talk a little bit about the political chaos in Virginia. We have Governor Ralph Northam, Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax, the Attorney General Mark Herring. They all started this year up to their neck in controversy. I mean, we had the blackface issue regarding, you know, the governor and the attorney general, and that seemed to consume so much. Oh, did I forget the lieutenant governor accused of sexual assault?
Yes.
Not once, but twice.
Yeah.
This is shocking because Justin Fairfax was considered in many circles the heir apparent to the throne of being governor. And then where did this what is happening in Virginia?
Well, you know, it was early. I believe it was in the first quarter of the year. And so Virginians have obviously had political amnesia, which happens all the time, i.e. Donald Trump, because those three are still running the state of Virginia. And I think that one thing, it was important that these stories came out to the forefront. I think that it was a great news cycle when it was. Both of us were on the show and got to talk to you a lot about it, Harold. And so thank you for that. But at the end of the day, people developed amnesia, and those three are still running the state. I think it's so incredibly funny to see it happen, and I'm glad that we have this roundup to talk about it, because they're still in charge.
And not only are they in charge, but there's word that Fairfax is even considering
running for governor.
That's right.
Is it because people are more interested in the work that these individuals are doing and less about what they might or may or might not have done in the past? But it is fascinating to see that all three seem to be just literally brushing their shoulders off and walking on through.
And he has sued TV stations, including, I think he's also sued CBS, I believe it was, after these reports came out, suing the women who have claimed that he sexually mm-hmm. Assaulted them. And so the mess of this isn't just the allegations. There is, you know, certainly so much fallout. And what we've seen in Virginia is what happened to the House in Virginia. The Democrats are now in leadership positions, for example. And so it may not seem to bother him, and those issues may certainly be bigger than the governor and the lieutenant governor and the attorney general. So I just think that all of that is fascinating. Listen, we need to take a break, but we are going to continue with the top stories of 2019. We've done 10, 9, and 8. We have 7 more to go. Stay with us. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I want to hear what you think is your top story for 2019. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM. Want to hear from you at 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, Sirius XM Channel 142, HBCU and Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment, and we are talking about the top stories of 2019. There have been so many stories. We've narrowed down our choices for the top 10. My guests are Misha Green. She is the D.C. editor of the Afro-American newspaper, and Keith Alexander, reporter with The Washington Post. What do you think about the top stories that we've selected? What do you think is one of the top stories of 2019? Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Number 7, the federal government shutdown. Now, this was 35 days, and technically the federal government shutdown actually didn't start in 2019. It started at the very end of 2018. So it was well underway a year ago today. However, the lion's share of that federal government shutdown happened in 2019. And whether you work for the federal government or you knew somebody who did, if you were covering this story, this was probably one of the most heartbreaking things to happen to federal government workers, not just nationwide, but particularly here in the D.C. metro. And I think it revealed that for a lot of even high-paid federal government workers, that financially the emperor had no clothes.
And the ripple effect is just, even if you're not directly, you don't directly work for the federal government, you were affected.
Yeah.
And you felt it. You saw it for over 30-some days. It was incredible. I mean, I cover crime, right? I cover the Superior Court. And talking to federal prosecutors, you know, talking to public defenders about, I'm basically working for free. And, you know, and finding out, well, what does this mean for individuals who are arrested and just the whole ripple effect. That's just from that standpoint. Not to mention people, you know, trying to pay their mortgages and their bills and trying to find ways to cover costs of college tuitions and things like that. It was something that D.C. had not seen in a very long time. And I think D.C. also realized that they're very much like a lot of Midwestern towns that were automotive town or a steel town, that they are tied to a certain economy.
Absolutely. It was devastating. I covered tons of events surrounding the furlough, a lot of food giveaways and clothing drives and things like that. And just to hear some of the stories, you know, of people who just a month ago had splurged on Christmas gifts and done so many great things that they thought they'd be able to afford later that they just couldn't. I mean, I remember hearing a story of a mother who said daughter could only shower to like one Harry Styles song and things like that. You know, those were the rules in that household where those children never wanted before. You know, we here in DC to get a good government job. That's how you sustain a life. And yet that became really a risk factor for so many people. And Keith, it was really important for you to mention that ripple effect. I talked to hairdressers and people who own small businesses that lost their clientele in a major way and took hits because people couldn't get their hair done. They couldn't afford that. And so it was devastating for us to see it here in the district as well as nationwide, but it was also great to see how people came together. You know, you don't really get to see how nice people can be. And so that was really wonderful. I'm happy we were able to avoid one at the end of this year.
I think the resources that were used to help feed people and everything else, they were kind of straining even early, because it's one thing to deal with the working poor population or the homeless population that is kind of just beneath the surface. But when you're talking about people who never had to go to a food pantry, people who never had to seek assistance before, whether they were paycheck to paycheck or almost paycheck to paycheck, barely making ends meet in the beginning, but then when this happened and not getting paid for 35 days, all of a sudden they were thrown into the community that helps those, like I said, the working poor and the homeless. And I think that they have had a difficult time kind of recovering from that. Here we are a year later. And I think it's a cautionary tale about not only personal finances, but also what's happening, what could happen in the federal government. Because as you just mentioned, we really just avoided another shutdown about a week or so ago.
And year to year, can people live like that?
Right.
Can people really go through this year after year, that angst, that anticipation, that worry? I mean, you hit the nail on the head, is that it was interesting to see people who are quote unquote middle class.
Yes.
You know, having to stand in line for help.
But you know what? You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the height of the recession when we had, members of the middle class walking away from homes and dealing with some of the other financial issues when they lost their job, where, they barely had enough to live for 2 weeks, not to mention the so-called 4 to 6 months. So, certainly something to think about even as we move into 2020. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Here's one that really captured the attention of the nation.
I've been truthful and consistent on every single level since day one. I would not be my mother's son if I was capable of one drop of what I've been accused of.
Really? Jussie Smollett from the hit show Empire, his acting empire has certainly not boded very well after he alleged that he was attacked by a homophobic Make America Great Make America Great Again. I don't even know. What's this? Make America Great Racist. Again slogan, hat-wearing, bleach-carrying, rope-tying, racial slur. What?
2 o'clock in the morning in Chicago.
Yes.
Coming in from January.
January, yes. Yeah. Going to get a hoagie from Subway.
it's... you know, it's really unfortunate that this thing has snowballed. And there's always been that, that really difficult conversation, we'll see, when black folks are making noise, and now, people believe they're not telling the truth. Gay folks making noise. So you believe, if one of them makes noise, then the rest of them are lying. And then, of course, the city of Chicago, the police department, got involved and, he got indicted. Whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, this was better than the show.
It really was better than anything Lee Daniels, Tyler Perry, or anyone could write together. It was fascinating. You have people who never heard of the TV show Empire, let alone Jesse, who were following this. Because yes. I remember one time I went over to my mother's house for Sunday dinner, and she's 87 years old, and the first thing I walked through the door, did that boy make up this story? I don't know. It was amazing how many people followed this whole case. I think no one's seen anything like this. And I was at a function, and Taraji P. Henson was there over the phone, and she still believes that she really does believe him, that this happened to him.
Yeah, and there was criticism by the Chicago against the Chicago police about paying more attention to the Smollett case than Chicago's murder rate.
Right. I mean, and that was something that was happening. We saw that the Chicago police paying more attention to Smollett than they were paying attention to R. Kelly, right? Which I think was something that people brought up. But I think what's really interesting in all of this is that Jesse's entire career has been so incredibly tarnished that it makes me, start listening to these conspiracy theorists and wondering about the Moniques and the validity of what they're having to say about people like Lee Daniels, right? I mean, if Taraji is so incredibly sure that this happened to Jesse, and Jesse is saying that he did not make this up and that it happened, and yet we see all these pieces coming together. There were a lot of people who I thought were quiet, and so it is an unfortunate situation. One thing that it made me think about is the fact that people don't take our issue seriously enough anyway. And so when you have somebody like Jesse Smollett that the whole world took seriously and then this happened, it is really unfortunate. We saw the same thing happen with Carol Sanchez a couple weeks ago, who we know made up her story. And, again, we don't take black girls missing seriously enough. And when we did, and she made it up, that made us look really bad. And so that's the really unfortunate part. I don't know whether or not he made it up. Something doesn't look right. And I think that there are other people who we should be looking at.
It kind of harkens back to the Tawana Brawley days. I don't know if you remember that.
refreshing the Tawana Brawley. Yes,
Al Sharpton. She was attacked by a group of back up in New York allegedly in the 80s, and no one seemed to believe her. And Al Sharpton, that's when he really became prominent nationwide for stepping in and becoming Tawana Brawley's voice, saying that she was attacked and she was defecated on by a gang of young thugs. It was fascinating just how this story just became bigger and bigger. I mean, involving two Nigerian actors,
had a relationship with him. But here's the other thing. Should people have been so quick to believe the Chicago Police Department when they had this reputation of a poor reputation as related to Black Lives Matter cases and the like? And then should people have been so quick to believe the Chicago police, or was Smollett's story just so difficult to believe?
I think that's what it was. I think people who are looking at this and just saying, a lot of this just doesn't make sense. You're walking the streets of Chicago with a rope tied around your neck going back into the hotel.
Yeah.
Because you're too in shock to take the rope from around your neck. Going to, you're walking the streets 2 o'clock in the morning to go to the subway because you have a hankering for a sandwich. It just, a lot of things just didn't make
sense. As a celebrity. Yeah. As a major celebrity. Yeah.
By yourself. Well, you got aides, assistants, who can go to that Subway and get your sandwich for you.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Or, you know, Uber Eats.
Yeah.
And why not? And, you know, I think, to put a fine point on it, when Dave Chappelle did his latest comedy thing, and he described Jussie Smollett as "je suis Smollier,"
yes,
you know, which, you know, which was really funny. Obviously, Dave Chappelle didn't believe Jussie Smollett either. Staying in Chicago, R. Kelly is staying behind bars after the surviving R. Kelly documentary came out.
Part one, right.
That's right. we're certainly waiting on the remix, whether that'll be on TV or whether it'll be in court. And I think this R. Kelly situation comes at a really interesting time when we're talking not about Me Too, but we're talking about, you know, Me Too squared, where we're really focusing on trafficking of minor women. And, you know, there's always
even black girls. Let's leave it, break it down.
That's what I'm saying. The narrative is that nobody pays attention to the trafficking of black girls. Well, if nothing else, the allegations against R. Kelly have really, really brought that into the forefront. But we've all seen the documentary. As a father of a now 21-year-old young woman, it just wasn't too long ago that she was at the age that R. Kelly was allegedly doing his Piper thing with these young girls. And it made me feel extremely uncomfortable.
What blew my mind was that we all knew about this for years.
Yeah.
That documentary, only thing that was new was that it was voices. We got to see and hear the voices. But we knew about this since, you know, for decades. R. Kelly's relationship with Aaliyah, going all the way back to that. And now, I wasn't joking, they are working on, Lifetime is working on a part two documentary with additional footage of additional victims. But what's fascinating, as a journalist, I have to say that's one of the, I think the journalist wants is that I worked on a project, and as a result of my project, something happened. And he was charged as a result, really, of this documentary. And, you know, journalistically, that says a lot. But, you know, he's still locked up and has pled not guilty. He's in court a couple of weeks ago, and he pled not guilty. Well, of course he's going to plead not guilty, because he's smart enough to realize, will these victims actually show up in court and testify against him? Because the first time he was let off because the family members saying, no, that's not my daughter in that movie. And so he's betting that the same thing is going to happen the next go around.
Yeah, and he's facing charges not only in Cook County, but also in New York.
Transporting.
This is just really, it's really shocking. And I don't know about you guys, but I have not heard a lot of R. Kelly music this year after this has come out in any of the parties. I haven't, you know, the steppers have found other things to step to.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that that's one of the biggest achievements as well to this court case is the fact that R. Kelly was able to be muted successfully, particularly from that documentary. A lot of people, and particularly black people, had been giving him pass for way too long. Like you said, Keith, we've known about R. Kelly and his indecency with young women since the Aaliyah days and before. And he was getting pass after pass and talking about it in his music. And I mean, it was just quite disgusting. And so I think in that way, it was great that, again, journalists and people who were able to really dig deep and find these stories and people to tell these stories, it was a great moment for journalism. It was also a great moment for people and survivors of sex trafficking to be able to have their voices heard. I think this time around, families will not be too embarrassed. And I think that this is
It wasn't so much embarrassment. Some people wonder whether they were paid off. to stay at home.
Fair enough.
So I wasn't so much embarrassed. It was more of, you know, one of the fathers, one of the victims, he has a credit on one of R. Kelly's CDs for playing the guitar. I mean, they got jobs and got money as a result, allegedly. So it wasn't so much, you know, embarrassed. It was more of whether or not R. Kelly was able to pay them off for their silence.
I think embarrassed or whether or not they just were paid off is that they have been quiet. And I don't think that families will be quiet anymore. I think that's the lesson that we've seen in this, and that you can't be quiet in order to bring justice and light to these situations.
Well, D.C. was not quiet this summer. I tell you, the Shaw community and U Street, 14th and U,
together.
I tell you, there was no letting up, whether it was D.C.'s, can I call it the indigenous go-go community, all the way to City Hall when the newcomers were complaining about the blasting of music at 7th and Florida Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you. And it is, that to me was just really such an interesting story, because we are essentially talking about DC's homegrown culture, not just the music, but the entire go-go culture, which is an international phenomenon now, mm-hmm. but it started right here in little old D.C. And that when you had, you know, newcomers that apparently love D.C. and they are part of this gentrification phenomena, and the two clashed. They really clashed, and it seems like homegrown D.C. won out.
I think that was the breaking point. I think you call them indigenous or natives or longtime residents of D.C.
That's right.
Who've been here since, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s. This was it. I mean, you saw the gentrification happening over for years. But this was, I think, the breaking point that they were able to articulate. They being natives saying, okay, now this has gone too far. This store was here playing this music before you moved, before that condo, that building even was built. This store on the corner of 7th and Florida was playing that go-go music. It was playing when you went to even look at the condo before right. you even bought it. It had to have been playing. And yet you could move in there thinking, because you're paying so much money, because your taxes are paying so much, you can get those folk who were here before you to move, like you did the churches, like you did certain stores, like you did certain bars. You can do the exact same thing. And I think residents were like, you know what, enough is enough. Now you've gone too far. We're done, and we're going to fight back. And it was a rallying cry, if you will. And D.C. hasn't seen anything like that in a very, very long time.
Yeah, it was great that go-go could be the rallying factor for mm-hmm. D.C. I think that's awesome and really a testament to what D.C. and what D.C. residents in general were fighting for, which was cultural sustainability. You know, I think for a very long time they were sad and afraid when their favorite restaurants went away and their favorite bars and their churches were closing and moving into Prince George's County and the like. But when go-go was muted, right. that was it. And it also just became a great moment for go-go in general. The resurgence has been wonderful in the past year since the Don't Mute and Long Live Go-Go movements and Mochella. And then we saw the Don't Mute movement at the BET Awards.
Yeah.
And then we've had Go-Go Awareness Week, which has been great. And so, I mean, this is a time. And now, obviously,
don't forget the official song of D.C. Go-Go.
Right. Well, right. It'll hopefully become the official genre of the city. All 11 council members introduced the bill. And so, you know, we know it's going to happen. And so I think it's just a great moment for D.C. in general. And now that the go-go conversation has happened, we can talk about the other issues such as gentrification and the culture of sustainability.
Let's move on to number three, some voices that were muted this year. We've lost some greats. this year in 2019. One of the ones that I'd like to start with as we take a look at the top stories of 2019. And this was a difficult one to deal with, I think.
He lived the American dream, and he wanted it for everyone else. He spoke with unsurpassed clarity and moral integrity.
That's Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi talking about the passing of Maryland Congressman from District 7, Elijah Cummings, representing part of Baltimore County and Howard County. She called him the moral compass of the House, the North Star. Really, really big loss, particularly in the wake of all of the political turmoil that was going on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, no, Cummings' passing was a game changer, I think, for the United States. First of all, us recognizing Cummings as an American hero, this black man. But, I mean, this was such a huge year for Cummings in general as he mm-hmm. became chair of the House Oversight Committee. And obviously his last words to Michael Cohen will ring with me for the rest of my life. You know, that whole imagery when he's when we're dancing with the angels. Mm-hmm. And obviously that became prophetic. You know, we had no idea that Cummings was as ill as he was. I had seen him and thought, oh, he's not looking too great, mm-hmm. but not to the extent that he would pass this year. And so it was a major loss, but I think truly a testament to who he was and all the people who came out and spoke at his funeral lying in state on Capitol mm-hmm. Hill. I just think, it was obviously...
First African American.
Mm-hmm. I mean, really, sad, but I also think there's so much triumph that has come out of his passing. And it was great to see, again, American people honor him. And, it was great to see Trump cop all those pleas, I think, after not only when he got to Baltimore and Cummings was still living, but obviously after his passing, he had to apologize.
Yeah. Mm. Also, we lost some greats. Toni Morrison. Mm-hmm. Jesse Norman, the opera singer, Nancy Wilson, John Singleton,
Diane Carroll,
yes. just so many, the institutional, knowledge, the entertainment and intellectual brain trust of Black America is shifting. I would think it's really, really shifting. And just a, just a plug, of course, Elijah Cummings, Toni Morrison, and Jesse Norman, Howard University.
HU.
Yes. I think that we should mention that.
Yes.
Let's quickly move. I got, number two, DC and Baltimore's homicide rates. Baltimore, is horrific, more than 340 right now, sounding more like mm-hmm. D.C. during the Dodge City days of the 80s mm-hmm. and the 90s. D.C., not as bad as it was then, mm-hmm. but still a notable homicide rate.
Yes, it's up about 3%. The homicide rate is up about 3%.
163.
Right now.
Yeah.
A lot of it, again, I cover crime and we're seeing it. What's most startling is the number of these cases that are still unsolved. That is probably what's most startling to a lot of people. When I talk to individuals in the community, it used to be, a lot of these people will get arrested, but now we're seeing a lot of unsolved cases. We're seeing a lot of these individuals who are children. That has also been very startling. The number of murder victims who are under the age of 18 has been startling. Those of us who have been covering this for a while, that's one of the things we've been talking about in the newsroom. The number of babies, children, mm-hmm. who have been killed this year. Yeah. Senselessly.
Just blatant. I mean, we always hear the term senseless violence. Certainly all of it is senseless. But in so many cases, it raises a question about, if you move the drug trade aside and the crews, the issue of civility and how this has, constantly creeping up. And again, particularly, in Baltimore where just last Friday, a young woman who ran a beauty shop. She was the mother of a 1-year-old. Mm-hmm. A man went in and shot her.
And she was fearful of this. She had been on record.
Right.
Yeah. Saying that she was afraid this was going to happen.
Absolutely. I want to get to number one, and we all know what that is.
She hates the Republican Party. She hates all of the people that voted for me and the Republican Party. So now they get to the Senate, and now we have the majority, and it's up to Mitch McConnell. Now they want McConnell to do wonderful things for them. I mean, he's going to do what he wants to do.
The impeachment process continues or not on Capitol Hill, but beyond just the impeachment of Donald Trump, the political discontent that his personality and his presidency has created in this country, I think is just amazing. And you would almost think that the impeachment is the culmination of that, but it ain't over, and it may not be.
No, it's nowhere close to being over. I mean, right now we see this impeachment primarily as just a partisan disagreement, mm-hmm. more than anything else. And so, again, we're losing really sort of the underlying concerns that the Democrats really have in this debate between whether or not he should truly lose the seat as president of the United States. And so, you know, right now I think it was a major success for Congress. Obviously, there have been those people like Nancy Pelosi, and Maxine Waters who had been vying for impeachment since the very beginning. And so in that sense, congratulations to the Democratic Majority Congress in that sense. But now, you know, Trump is not at all anxious about this at all. We've seen him do things wrong before and people pointing it out, and yet he is still running the free world. And now he gets to go with his homies.
When you have Mitch McConnell basically saying, we are going to follow the lead of the White House. We are going to basically do what the White House tells us.
The White House says.
Yes. and that tells you. I mean, that's what a lot of people think. You know, we expect Congress to do this. What's going to happen with the Senate? That was a big deal. Watching what happens with the Senate, because right now there's no teeth to this impeachment. We're going to see what actually happens with the Senate.
Yeah, we're going to continue to watch. Amisha Green, Keith Alexander, thank you both for coming in and talking to us. Happy New Year. I will see you, Lord willing, in the creek don't rise in 2020. There we go. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this last Friday of 2019, December 27th. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Taylor Thomas, Millette Green, Bramante Bryan, producer Candace Atkins, engineer Iron Waller, I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night and have a wonderful weekend.